Thank you very much, Paul. I'd like to introduce the instructors for the next seminar, which is titled Imaging the Anthropocene. Professor Wolfgang Lucht is co-chair of the Earth System Analysis, one of the four research domains at the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research in Potsdam. He's also the Alexander von Humboldt Chair in Sustainability Science at the Department of Geography at Humboldt University in Berlin, a physicist turned geoecologist and sustainability scientist. Wolfgang's work addresses the future of the biosphere, the effects of climate and land use change on global landscapes, the interaction between human societies and the Earth's environment, sustainability, and Earth systems analysis. He's been leading PIK's research groups on the global biosphere and on climate impacts and vulnerability. Among his active and previous functions are membership of the European Space Science Committee, speaker of the German Climate Change Research Program, member of the German National Committee on Global Change Research, and lead authorship in the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's special report on renewable energy sources and climate change mitigation. He was recently appointed a member of the German Committee for Future Earth. Philip Ostwald was an architect and a publicist, is professor for architectural theory and design at the University of Kassel since 2006. Between 2009 and 2013, he was director of the Bauhaus Dessau. Before he founded his office in Berlin in 1998, he had been working for the Office of Metropolitan Architecture for Rem Koolhaas in Rotterdam. As a visiting professor, he's been teaching design at the Brandenburg TU University in Cottbus. He's co-founder of the European project Urban Catalyst, an interdisciplinary platform addressing the radical processes of transformations in cities and landscapes. He was co-director of the Volkspalast 2004 at the Palais de Republik in Berlin, and curated Shrinking Cities, an interdisciplinary project. And as an author and an editor, he's been working for the architectural magazine Arch Plus and published widely on urban planning and architecture. And I believe that the two other members of the seminar are not here. Is that correct? So I won't be doing an introduction for Bronislaw Chichinski and Sverka Sörlin. I think actually Wolfgang and Philip are going to do the presentation tonight. So please welcome Wolfgang and Philip to the stage.
Well, actually Bronislaw is here. He's sitting back there. He's just not speaking because he just arrived. So hi, Bron. Well, so it's very exciting for us to be here, talking about imaging of the Anthropocene. One of the most exciting things for me, at least, is to really meet all of you. I've already seen many very interesting faces, and I look forward to getting to know you. We'll be talking about imaging the Anthropocene. Our fourfold team was already mentioned, and we'll be just giving little dialogue. We won't be giving you big theories or deep thoughts, but we'll just go through some images with you and share with you a little bit some of our points of departure on this topic. So this is what you get from Google if you type in the word Anthropocene. This was 2 days ago on Wednesday on google.com. And even though this is very small, you can only kind of get a guess, but you already get a feeling here of the types of images that come up, obviously, when you Google the word Anthropocene. And so, as you can see, you see all the nice social processes, you see our thoughts, you see all these important things, you see the geology, or don't you? Do you see us? The question we asked is, is the Anthropos in the Anthropocene really visible in these things? We see climate change. There's a few figures that are clearly related to climate change. Two of them are related to the ice ages, by the way, to the past. There's something about networks. There's a whole number of images that have network-type things in them. There are a lot of globes. Evolution is mentioned quite prominently early up. Cities appear in various forms. And some VW beetles with strange humans on them. Several of them. This is actually an underwater sculpture park in Mexico that an artist did with this submerged 8-meter-deep VW beetle sculpture with this person hovering near it. And it actually turns out that most of these images are just from a handful of websites. It's not, you know, these are like a few places where people go, and this is the type of image worlds they have. This is the second page you get when you go further down. Most of this is from science or from some art exhibitions, and that's about what it is. So the question really is, if you know, where's the sociology? Where's the history? There's one image down there which is historical. It's also from an exhibition that was held in the United States, but that's about it. Where's the culture? Where's, you know, our human relation to the world? This is basically our point of departure. Do we really see the Anthropos here? And can we make some suggestions about some other images that might come up? As you can see, HKW's imagery is already on the second page here coming up, so it'll work its way to the top if we are successful. Because the question really is, how do we actually create images of the world, of global change, of this reconstructed world? Because few of us can actually see the world. We all have to do it through images we construct that kind of give us a feeling of the world. Very few can be up there and actually look down. And as you can see, even if you were to go up, I mean, you don't see much. It's basically blue and white. And that doesn't tell you much about the realities and the architecture and the cities and all these complicated things in our heads either.
Yeah,
so what do you think?
Yeah, in a sense, of course, we see the Earth, but from within and not as a whole. And obviously, if you just put the two subjects of the Anthropocene together, the Earth and the human being, it's very obvious, it's very difficult to relate the two. Just one point is the matter of scale. The human being is... the Earth is 7 million times bigger than the human being. The same is true not just in size, but of time. If you take a lifespan of a human being and the time scales we engaged in with using fossil fuels and nuclear energy, it's also multiplied by 7 million. So it's hard to imagine an imagination of an image how to bring these two together in a good way. And there is a third issue of scale. It is, if we believe in the idea of free will, the Anthropocene is a co-production of billions of people. So how to imagine that? This is a artwork by a German artist, Adrian Sauer, who produced an image of 16 million individual pixels, where each pixel has a different color, an individual color, so which gives some imagination of this co-production of so many different individuals. And if we look at the human being, there is not only one way how to relate to the Earth, or to the world. I think there are very different ways how a human connects to the world, and it relates actually to the word in the introduction of saying there is a need of conceptual thinking, of aesthetic thinking, and political thinking. And if we, the relationship of the human body to the environment is, of course, in the imagination, in the brain, it is by the perception, and it is also metabolistic. And so you can say that the metabolism is a question of politics, of resources. You could say that perception is a question of aesthetics and imagination of the conceptual. Of course, they are interwoven. It's not so simple. And it is, in this context, interesting to remind that the human body is partly controlled by voluntary nervous systems and partly by involuntary nervous system, where the metabolistic aspects are more controlled involuntary, where the perception of imagination is more connected to the voluntary, but they are interwoven, they are not separated. So there's maybe not just one world to relate to, but several worlds. And another question is also to imagine more, I mean, we criticized in our outset for the seminar the flatness of imagination of the Anthropocene. The flatness is not just an issue of history, of culture, but it is also this, I'm saying now as an architect, also a question of spatial flatness, what we normally have is these world maps, not in the modeling, but in the world maps, it's just kind of a very flat image, and even we flatten them, so we erase the deepness. If we speak about the Anthropocene, we speak actually of the biosphere, which is a very thin layer of the Earth, so the diameter is over 6,000 kilometers, and the biosphere is just about, I think, 60 kilometers. But it has, of course, a thickness. And I think we have to understand also this thickness. If we represent and try to give an image of the Anthropocene, and the thickness of the Anthroposphere has kind of incredibly expanded. So for a long time of human mankind, it was very flat of a few hundred meters, and it just exploded in the last 100 years, 200 years in the time of the emerging of the Anthropocene to dozens of kilometers or even more, however you consider a kind of space technology. So the question is how to represent this kind of deepness. So this is an image of a series of sections, not just one section, but a series of sections from medical studies. And of course, not just to have maybe kind of to think about a series of sections, but also about the interconnectivity of these sections. This is like an early attempt from human production in trying to represent connections in between layers.
So the question really is how these brains that we see in layers and sections on different timescales, how our perceptions of the world, our processing of the world, how the time dimensions of these different things, the scales, how it all comes together and images that somehow put us in relation to the world. And this is part of the creative process that you want to be in. One interesting, just one selected point from the history of these types of developments is one proposal that I find interesting from the late 50s from the famous Buckminster Fuller, who was, you know, a very optimistic, technocratic thinker about many things in the world, who proposed to put something that they called a geoscope, to put this big globe on an island in the Hudson River opposite from the United Nations building. And this was the type when television came around, and he believed that television would liberate people to really get educated, because you could sit in the jungles of Africa and receive lectures from Harvard rather than American soap operas, but maybe now mobile phones and Wikipedia will deliver that. But he suggested to put television tubes on the outside of such a globe and then play data sets of things that you can't really see, like migration movements, the movement of clouds, the development of world population. And it's not by accident across from the United Nations buildings. The whole thing was supposed to be exactly the same height as the building, because this, he was deeply convinced that you have to actually physically encounter things in forms of an image, in this case produced a produced image of the Earth, of things you could not normally see, like migration movements, but you would have to visually recognize them to know what you're dealing with. But of course, the input is scientific data. So this whole thing about the interface of how you get it into the brain and the role images play in that has been a long history. Alexander von Humboldt was an important pioneer in these, and there's a long history, which we'll talk a little about in our seminar. It's an interesting early attempt to talk about global data sets and visual approaches to that. And of course, today's variant of that, the computer model generated global change iconic images like of global climate warming. And the other type of image is the destruction of natural habitats, the destruction of animal species, the decline in biodiversity. These are the two of the big leading problems, the global change problem, the climate change problem, and the biodiversity destruction problem, which is caused mainly by land use expansion. Much could be said about that. So these are ways we encounter that. Now, here's an interesting thing. Also, of 2 days ago, you see the BBC main web pages, two of them. One is more the UK level, and the other one is the international level. And you can also see an Anthropocene image landing on comets, I think is very anthropocenic in many ways. And you see the emissions pledges on the international panel. But up you see a few items, maybe you can read it. This is the most important thing to people: news, sports, and weather. So how did my team do? Do I need an umbrella tomorrow? And are there any headlines I might want to read? But the next two are interesting, Earth and Future. I was really surprised to see these as top-level headings, Earth and Future. I wonder what these are about. And then come the really important things, shop, TV, and radio. So, very interesting. On the topic of shopping, of course, one of the things behind both climate change and the destruction of habitats is our shopping. This is by Helsinki-based photographer Klaus Welp, an image who just imaged all the shelves in a supermarket in Helsinki. These are all the shelves, all the products of the whole supermarket. And I just blew up a little bit one, so you can see all the shampoos and the different colors and, you know, all the selection. And you can maybe see the fruit counter on the bottom and all the yogurts and all that stuff. And of course, as we extract materials for that, we destroy habitats. And as we produce waste, like CO2 emissions, it's climate change. So this really is the core process behind it all. It's a material process here in this image.
And this, of course, points again out to the question of co-production, that each consumer is co-producing the Anthropocene by consuming, and that consumption is a matter of design.
Then, of course, artists also have something to say, because the art can be used as a form of protest, as a form of really getting to you to think, and of producing images that really carry more than any analysis. I mean, Alexander von Humboldt, he published these big books with all these tables about his barometric measurements and temperatures and heights and all that. But in the end, he understood that you need an image to convey the whole thing, a systemic approach. And this artist here, Norwegian artist Svein Fløgeri Johansen, he had the problem that he grew up in this nice landscape up there in northern Norway at the Alta River, and they were going to build a huge dam and flood the whole place, which actually then happened. And so he took this original fire site of some people living in this area, and he put it in a museum first. This was in London in 2011. And then he covered it with metal, with chrome, made it nice and shiny. This is a picture taken when it was shown in Berlin 2 years ago in an exhibition about freedom. And he actually plays some sounds to it. You hear sounds recorded in that river, the Alta River, underwater and above water. And if the stock market rises, you hear the above water sounds. And if the stock market falls, you hear the below water sounds, because, of course, the stock markets drive this destruction of this landscape. So this is an anthropocenization, basically, of that fireplace that is more of a traditional thing and is now in a museum covered in metal. It's the original fireplace. It's not some reconstructed thing. One approach to really transforming things into modes that are completely detached from the surroundings. Now, of course, we are in the process on a planetary scale. These are some computer simulation examples from my research group, where from top to bottom you can see, as the temperature rises, the regions, which you can see in color, where somehow ecosystems start shifting, where chemical relations start shifting, where all the species start shifting, basically start covering the whole globe. So 5 degrees is what we will have at the end of the century if nothing happens, and basically no ecosystems really escape fundamental risk of transformation. This is the same thing carried to the global scale, but also visualized as a scientific image. So the question really is, how stable is the ground that we stand upon? I mean, how certain are we about the future? Why do we assume, and public policy assumes, that everything kind of is predictable and all we will have is variants of the present and the future? This is an installation that was also here in Berlin by Anke Eckhardt, who gave a talk in this very building about a year ago about it, where she mounted big concrete plates to the ground, and they were moving. You could walk on them, and they would react to your walking in an unpredictable manner, and you would feel very queasy and uncertain when you walk on it, asking the question, how stable is the foundation that we think we rest upon? As a physicist, this is a scheme of everything that we kind of produced, where we can see the co-evolution of geosphere and biosphere, of the anthroposphere. We have the word metabolism right in the middle, how all these things are coming together to one big system that we would then like to model at some point, a very wicked problem that we're working on. But this is also an attempt to create a picture of how things are connected in the world on the opposite end of the spectrum from the astronaut who just looks down at the blue scape.
Yeah, that is a kind of self-portrait of humans from the 1970s, a pioneer plaque. It is engaged in this question of the different scale, from the atomic scale at the left top to the Galaxian scale almost in the left center. And it is obviously a very technical image, a very scientific image. It lacks the dimension of history and of culture.
Yeah, and it was built so that future discoverers of the spacecraft, that is, these were the first spacecraft to leave the solar system, to be on trajectories that would leave the solar system, and this was supposed to be built in a form that other civilizations, if they have rational thought, they might be able to decipher it and find out how big we are and where in this galaxy we are situated. And one can talk about what these parts mean, but it has our bodies, it has the spacecraft in the end, these square and parabolic forms is the spacecraft, and that star-like feature basically pinpoints our position in the universe, and also the time when the spacecraft was launched can be read. So the question is, you know, would anybody out there be able to read this? So the images we produce or that we receive from the past... Well, if you saw this movie, what was it called, Independence Day, you can see that you can infect alien computer systems with viruses through an Apple computer. So the question really is the images we produce and we send to the future, you know, the product of our thought, are we talking to our children or our grandchildren, how will they decipher it, you know, if they don't have the time machine for going back that Neil Edwards proposed. Images are always messages into the past and into the future, from the past and into the future also. And the question is what language you can see them speaking.
Yeah. That is a quite interesting representation of the world, or cosmology, by Antonio Saliba. It is in the time frame from medieval time to modern times, and so it's kind of in flux, and it's kind of making a fusion of different understanding of the worlds, already kind of early Renaissance scientific concept of the Earth versus a rather proper mapping in the middle ring, and also, of course, very mystic and religious understandings which are in the center and on the outside, and also astronomic and astrological facts, are included.
So the idea is what we really need in the next phase is new cultural productions of narratives and of images that go with them. Like in the churches earlier here in Europe, when you had images that described the teachings of the church but gave a visual impression. But in this age, it would be irresponsible to not have them correspond to scientific findings as well. Mm-hmm. And there's a tradition in this, which is, you know, they're called cosmologies, where you basically have answers about the position of people in the world, but they're scientifically informed at the same time and can be constructed into something like this, which clearly has scientific ambitions because they're scientific or real-world objects and observations in it, but they're assembled in a way that gives it meaning on the basis of a certain world interpretation. Mm-hmm. And this seems to be an important part of a co-production between the arts, mainstream culture, and the sciences that we would need to really open again this dialogue about where we are and who we are. And so it's not by chance that this is an ancient image. What are these corresponding images to our time? And if you think back to those Googled images, I mean, do they have that quality? I think they don't, or it's very hard to find some. We had for our seminar up to now about 35 submissions of Anthropocene images that seminar participants already submitted, and we will work together in our seminar in the next 1.5 days, starting Sunday, about producing a few statements and visualizations of that on the basis of that to kind of try to keep up with these guys from previous. And the last slide we have are just that. We have images, imaginaries, so images that kind of reflect a certain social discourse, and imaginations, just how might the world be really different? I mean, we all know that science fictions are a way to deal with present problems in fantasized technological worlds, but they have a certain bent. Can we do, you know, purely social science fiction? Can we do, because one of the biggest problems today, in our opinion, is that, you know, everybody thinks that the future needs to be a variant of today, and we are not bold enough to really think about radical different futures, and images and stories are a good manner of dealing with that. These are from the 12th century, the second half of the 12th century, old cosmological images, in this case from Hildegard von Bingen. I grew up very close to where she grew up, and I was interested in her before it became very mainstream and popular, as it is today. But the three ones that you can see here, based on visions, is really the first one is about the place of Earth in the universe, The second one is about the place of humans on Earth. You can see them cultivating in some bad fumes things, and some trees lost their leaves because of bad influences. And the third is really about the position of humans in the whole system of creation, in her case, of cosmologies. And these questions, who are we? What is our place in it? What place do we want to be in? And you know, what's the meaning of the whole? We have to try to give new answers to that, and images have always been a very strong part of that. And this we will try to use and first reflect a bit and then project into the future, because the question is, what will we do with our freedom that we have, given that we also have metabolic requirements that are not free, but this part that is free, how will we use that to engage with what we encounter in the Anthropocene?
And I think it's very important to understand this as a kind of self-portrait. I think that many understandings of the Anthropocene is like the world out there, or certain kind of concept in the brain, but it's really very much how we place ourselves in the world, so the relationship of ourselves to the world, so how we imagine us in the cosmos.
Okay, so this was our not very theoretical, but hopefully creatively stimulating approach, because we want to be in that creative mode and not in the academic analytical mode, but we want to take up everything that the history of sciences, the sociology of these processes, and the natural sciences with their production of anthropocenic information provide us, but then we want to mainly be in the creative mode, and second, we want to focus on anthropos, because we think the anthropos, us, is missing in many of these images, unlike those that we have from our predecessors.